all those having business before trial, Fair Park 6, the criminal court, draw near.
In the 1961-62 television season, it was possible to turn to CBS every Saturday night and see an episode of a program called The Defenders, a legal drama about a father and son team of lawyers.
Well, how does getting pregnant girls reinstated in high school fall under the heading of women's rights?
Well, she's coming here at 4:30 this afternoon to discuss it. Why don't you ask her then?
The weekly program was like a parade of thorny, ambiguous, vexing legal and social issues.
But we're talking about a man's life here, Dad!
Now, just you listen to me for a minute. Don't you dare tell me what we're dealing with. I've been juggling men's lives since before you were born.
Was there anything they didn't touch? Any subjects too hot to handle? Says writer Ernest Canoy.
Well, I can't think of any. They did blacklist and abortion and civil liberties and cooperation against individual.
Says producer Robert Berger, credited as Buzz Berger in those days.
Abortion was a subject. Cannibalism was a subject. We did as many as 36 hours in 1 year.
The Defenders was, in short, a risky show on network TV. It happened to have been born in a particular atmosphere in broadcasting, when those kinds of risks were being encouraged by the young, newly elected president.
The Kennedy administration believed that government had a legitimate role to play in the development of a country's cultural life.
Marianne Watson wrote The Expanding Vista, American Television in the Kennedy Years. She points out that the emphasis of the Federal Communications Commission, the official regulators of radio and television, changed in the 60s from technology to programming. This was a new era, especially after FCC Chairman Newton Minow's historic speech to broadcasters in 1961, famously describing television as a vast wasteland.
Your license lets you use the public's airwaves as trustees for 180 million Americans. The public is your beneficiary.
Minow came along and said, wait a minute, we have a legitimate role in uplifting the content of television programming.
In a time of peril and opportunity, the old, complacent, unbalanced fare of action, adventure, and situation comedies is simply not good enough.
The Defenders, sometime before, had been pitched to CBS by its creator, Reginald Rose, and flatly rejected by the network. But in the wake of the new frontier and the regulatory zeal in the air, CBS sort of unrejected it, you might say. They quickly pulled it off the shelf, knowing it would impress the government with its good intentions. They invoked the program in testimony before panels on the state of television in America.
All three networks wanted to have something to point to when they were called in front of those senatorial committees and say, yeah, look, we're doing Playhouse 90, we're doing The Defenders, we're doing NBC, you know, Drama Night or something. That didn't mean that they weren't willing to aim at the lowest common denominator more often than not.
But The Defenders was at the top, pushing issues and principles to the limit, often resulting in angry advertisers. Creator Rose, who frequently wrote the show as well, and Herbert Brodkin, who produced it, seemed to enjoy walking that line, especially with the support of a loyal audience.
It shot right to the top of the ratings almost instantly.
In one show, the Prestons, father and son, contemplate a potential execution.
Do you believe in capital punishment?
No, I don't.
If your way is the proper way, and if Clinton is guilty of murder, which he obviously is, then the state will put him to death. I want to try and save his life.
In another called Die Laughing, they tackle issues around the right to die.
I happen to believe a man has the right to decide whether he wants to live or die.
This one starred the comic Milton Berle.
I don't think the society or anybody else has the right to make that decision for him.
Those were general. Buzz Berger remembers they also went for the very specific. Torn from the headlines, as they used to say.
We would read an article in the New York Times and a show would come out of it.
If I allowed my expressway to detour around every mangy bush in the city, it would look like a concrete corkscrew.
Ernest Canoy's script for the episode called The Man with the Concrete Thumb was a story based on Robert Moses, not even thinly veiled, though names were changed. It was about protests surrounding a superhighway designed to plow through a small city park.
Commissioner, there are experts who testified at the public hearing that the expressway should be routed through the dock area instead.
Harry, you know that every project I've built in the last 20 years has been met with a chorus of falsetto criticism
from amateur bleeding hearts.
He took the script to Rose and Brodkin, and Kanoy says they backed him up, regardless of any potential consequences.
They didn't give a damn what Robert Moses felt when he saw it. It was about a public issue which he was involved in.
You can't clean out a closet in this city without stepping on somebody's petty vested interest.
Kanoy also scripted the one titled The Nonviolent, as real-life civil rights dramas played out across America.
You see, if freedom and equality can be brought closer by having my client stay in jail for years or forever, then that's the choice he would make.
It was about a young white protester and his friend, a black minister, played by a very young James Earl Jones.
We can fight only one battle at a time. This one is for jobs. We're not here to prove our courage or idealism or purity, but to get jobs.
The intergenerational attorneys loosen their neckties for a debate over the unfolding political struggle.
We're talking about a genuine revolution going on in this country. Blood's being spilled. As millions of people are fighting for their freedom.
And if advertisers complain that they didn't want to sponsor controversy?
Oh, well, that's what I meant. That's sort of Herb Brodkin. He would tell people, you know, to go to hell, and there was nothing they could do. Politically, he wasn't particularly left, but he was a very strong person at what he wanted to do.
What luxury. A mandate to be risky. A producer who backed you up when you took the risks. A network forced into a position of responsibility by a new frontier mentality. Will a moment like that ever come again? Probably not. Interestingly, we've now found other ways to be responsible and thought-provoking on TV, but not many. And it almost always involves circumventing the mainstream, finding a niche. For four seasons, The Defenders' niche was the mainstream, and that in itself was pretty amazing. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fishkill.